We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We're here.
I wish I could keep this feeling. I wish I could keep this feeling.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Corner Podcast. Kel Dansby here with the old man Andreas Hale, talking MMA today. If you guys haven't yet, go check out our boxing episode for this week. Recapped an amazing weekend of boxing. I was in New Jersey for the Shakur Stevenson fight. We talked Floyd exhibitions, what's next, what opponents he's going to have coming up, Joe Joyce, the craziness of the heavyweight division. And already since then, there's been so much trash talk in the boxing world that we have a ton to cover next week when we get to our boxing show. So no slowing down, even though this is an off weekend, no boxing happening this weekend. Make sure you check out that show. If you are new to listening to us, we cover boxing, pro wrestling, and MMA. Kind of sets us apart. So every week you guys get three shows, one for each of those sports. And then we also mix in whatever's happening in pop culture, some hip hop and music talk, and whatever crosses our crazy Twitter timelines, which you guys will find out today, because that is going to be the lead of our show. But later, on the MMA portion, you guys are going to hear about the upcoming UFC fight night card between Mackenzie Dern and Jan, which goes on Saturday night. Dre, you won't be there. I won't be there. Nobody will be there. Reportedly, it was bought out by a by a very rich person, and no one else will be in attendance. So we'll talk about that here shortly. And then Dana White's contender series came to an end. We really haven't talked much about it. We actually got to talk a lot about it today because one Bo Nickel was on that and made one hell of a statement in his run on Dana White's contender series. So all of that to come in the MMA section. But like I mentioned before, sometimes we start these shows off outside of the world of combat sports. This is one of those days because your timeline, and at this point, you invite a lot of this in. So it's weird because you'll pose a question that's perfectly fine and fair and just question, and smart people don't respond to said question. Only weirdos.
Yep.
And stupidity comes at you after you pose these questions. So if you guys aren't on Twitter, if you don't follow Dre, you should, at Andreas Hale on all platforms. He was talking about the Malika Andrews situation, which I hate the phrasing of that because there is no situation for Malika Andrews. The situation is with the Boston Celtics, their head coach, who they suspended. We've touched on this previously in the show. And then furthermore, how journalists and shows cover this, specifically here to Stephen A. Smith, giving his take, which he teased and then had on First Take, and Malika Andrews giving her opinion on that same show. And now it's being painted as Malika Andrews does not like black men. Someone called her the female Jason Whitlock.
I mean, let's start from what it is. Obviously, you're dope. Suspended for the season for a relationship, basically violating team rules. they talk about this because the details were so murky about his involvement with said woman.
Yep.
Who is this woman? We don't know. There's a lot of rumors in rumors and innuendo floating around about who it is, but it's never been. We just know Udoka is the one that's being penalized for this. So Stephen A. Smith has been doing Stephen A. Smith things, and I didn't think he was necessarily wrong because he kind of blasted the Celtics organization for how they handled this. Nothing wrong with that. They had Kendrick Perkins and Stephen A. Smith on. Malik Andrews was there. And they started to drift into a blind spot where they were questioning the woman who was involved. And Malika was like, wait, hold on. Slow that down. Do not start making a victim out of this woman because, one, we don't know who she is. The Celtics have already done a bad enough job making us question what woman is. So every woman involved in the Celtics organization is beginning, basically, is it this woman? Is it this one? Is it this woman? She's like, let's not do that. Don't drift in the blind spot. Stephen A. Smith barked at her. She didn't really bark back, but she's like, I said what I said. And that was the end of the segment. Twitter was like, Malika Andrews is crazy. Why would she go at Stephen A. Smith like this? Blah, blah, blah. Then the interim head coach gets announced. She brings up his domestic abuse, his past from like 12 years ago. Some people thought that was out of line, that she hates black men now. Because why would she do this? Well, the reason why she did it, in my opinion, it's like, whatever's going on with Udoka, it's clearly not just a relationship thing. It is also involving something else that has made this become a very sticky situation. And if you replace his domestic issue, whatever it is, not saying it's violent, but whatever it is, with somebody with domestic violence in their past, it doesn't look too great.
No.
And the fact that she brought this up, it's not like she's lying. It exists. If it wasn't Malika Andrews, it'd be somebody else that brought it up. And now everybody says she's as bad as Sage Steele, another woman. I mean, I don't like Sage Steele either, but these two have nothing
apples
to do.
Apples and
oranges. Yeah, completely different reason why I don't like Sage Steele. She's become Jason Whitlock, and she hates black men. They posted a picture of her and I guess her boyfriend, who is a white man, which now means that she hates black men. And I just got a problem because it's defend black women until it's time to defend a black woman. And in this sport, in sports in general, as you know, Kel, there are very few African-American women, as is, across all sports. So the few that we have, once they have an opinion, black men get upset. So you see people on Twitter like, she should be fired. She's out of line. And I'm like, fired for what?
Upset's an odd word. Because, and I think you'd agree with this from what we see, they don't get upset. They get threatened.
Well, yeah, that's where it starts.
They're threatened by a black woman with a voice.
I don't get it. It's not like Malika was, like, people on my timeline were just saying really wild stuff. Oh, she's not going to fuck you, bro. What? Mary, dog, relax. Like, I don't want nothing to do with Malika Andrews. But the point is, like, I have an outspoken black woman as my wife. And I know plenty of men who don't like my wife speaking up. My wife speaks her mind. You know that. Like, she's very to the point. But she's passed two bar exams. She went to law school. She graduated magna cum laude. Of course she's going to have a voice. And there are men who do not like that, who truly believe a woman's place is in the kitchen or quiet, right? But just because Malika is doing her job doesn't mean she should be fired. Or doesn't mean that she's a threat to you as a man, especially if you're a black man. That's wild to me.
As a black man, again, key point, what you just said, doing her job. Dig into this. What is her job?
Journalism. Broadcast journalism.
That is her occupation.
Yeah.
To these people, her job, and this is something that, like, to me is definitely still fucked up in the community and everything, and many communities, damn near all communities. And we see this throughout, whatever race you are. But I'm a black man. This is about a black woman. Her job, first and foremost, is the protection of the black man and the black household to these people.
Yeah. Wow.
Whether it's her household or not, or her black man or not. She doesn't have a black man. She has white man. Doesn't matter. It's the protection of that is her first job. See it in many cultures.
Yeah.
Shout out to Danny Acosta, Reverse Rat Pack. He put it in like, yo, my Spanish family goes through this. Like, yeah, if I know Spanish side of family, you can't fuck with none of the girls in the family. Like, listen, you do wrong by one of them, all the uncles are pulling up. Everybody, yo, you got problems. But guess what? If she gets married and her Spanish husband hits her, yo, that's in the house. No, that's closed door. The uncles ain't pulling, like, oh, everybody has that little secret in their family and blah, blah, blah. Why? And that same thing in the black culture. No, no, no. We're protecting our black women. Oh, okay, now there's a black man, black woman dynamic. No, no, no. Her job is to protect him. I feel like that's culturally, and we see this throughout. And it made me remember conversations we had on this show where we've had this show for 8 years, but it was either when Trump won or like he was running or something. And there was something done or said, might have been the grabber by the whatever line. And we were like, yo, all these women still support Trump.
Yeah.
It's ingrained in their culture.
Yeah.
To the point of, you don't give a fuck about women, but your job first and foremost is to protect your man. And if he supports him, you got to support him. Makes no fucking sense. And that's an issue between men pushing that on women of all cultures. And we see that especially in sports. Like, yo, you can speak out. A lot of men just think, oh, you're a woman in sports? Cover WNBA. Cover women's soccer. Like, talk about women. But if you're coming to talk about men in sports, no, no, no. You can't say anything bad about those men. You can't say nothing bad about black men. But and it's not being honest. It's not being human. And also, it's not doing your job.
The crazy thing is what did she say that wasn't done, right? Like, it wasn't like she was making things up. It wasn't like she was like, oh, Doka's raping bitches. Like, she didn't do that. She was basically just saying, be careful with women, the women that are involved in this, because when you start treading that line, like, as to why didn't the woman get fired, we don't know what happened. Don't even ask that question, because what's the point of you asking it when that person hasn't been named? But furthermore, Udoka's the head coach of the Boston Celtics, who is a season removed from the NBA Finals. This is why this is headline news. I know people are like, well, what about Brett Favre? They're talking about Brett Favre. But Brett Favre is not coaching a team that just went to the NBA Finals. He's a retired football player. And yes, they talked about on First Take Today, they've talked about on a bunch of shows about Brett Favre shouldn't even be in the Hall of Fame because of this.
Yes.
Because it took Terrell Owens so long because they kept saying his character. Brett Favre was robbing welfare and redirecting welfare money. So, yeah, he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. Bye-bye, Brett Favre. But the Udoka situation is so murky because, one, it's salacious because it's dating, relationships. Like, that's the crux of it, and we don't know what happened. We know what happened with Brett Favre.
Yes, and we're learning more by the
day. Every day we learn more about how this money was redirected and just what a clown he is. But in the Udoka situation, Udoka's the one who fucked up. That's it. You broke team policy. And I've seen people on my Facebook that said, oh, this happens at every job. Why is it his? Because he's in a high-ranking position.
Yes.
You can cheat on whoever you want. You can have, like, you can do it at any job you want, right? If you get caught, you get caught, you get fired. That's just the way it goes. If the policy says no inter-office relationships, no inter-office relationships. But if you're the head coach of an NBA Finals team, and you get caught, you goddamn right. You're the dumbest one in the room. You fucking up the bag.
People acting like he worked at a call center.
Right.
He is not you and you are not him.
My man was not like, at Bank of America.
No, like this is not acceptable in his level of profile. And everyone understands that. As you climb whatever level of life you are, there's not things that I can do now that I could do 5 years ago.
No.
It's just not. Is not feasible. And I'm nowhere near on that level. So it's just like, you understand this. This is part of the job. It is part of the career. That is why they get paid so much.
Exactly.
It's not just because you know X's and O's better than Joe Schmo. It's because all of the responsibility that comes with the job. It's like when I wanted to go to school for medicine and they were like, yo, do you know how much malpractice insurance is for doctors? I was like, yo, they're paying an arm and a leg for that shit. I think I want to be a nurse, like a nurse practitioner, all this. But doctors are doctors because of the responsibility, not just the years of schooling, the responsibility they have on a daily basis. So you know at these high-ranking, high-level jobs, you are held to a different standard. So he gets no excuse. He gets no pass. Replacing him with someone with anything questionable in their background. Again, I don't think the assistant coach shouldn't be an assistant coach.
No.
I'm not saying he should be fired. Nothing like that. I'm saying read the room. Be smart, because you already look dumb on how you handled this. Be smart. You probably don't want to replace him with anyone questionable, anything questionable in their background.
And you want to act like she wants to hire. Now, furthermore, we have to address the power dynamic. Men are head coaches. Men are GMs. Men run the NBA,
yep.
Right? So there is a power dynamic that it has to be addressed. Men run sports broadcasting. We are in 100%. A male-dominated industry. And for us to act like we're not is just as foolish as acting like racism doesn't exist, right? Like, there is a power dynamic at hand here. But let's just say it was Becky Hammon who was sleeping with or had a relationship with whoever. But she's the head coach. The headline's not going to say the person that she slept with is Becky Hammon.
Yep.
Violates team policy. Why? Because she's the head coach. For them to act like that Malika Andrews did anything wrong by bringing this up or speaking out of turn to Stephen A. Smith, like, who, Stephen A. Smith ain't her daddy? Like, what is that?
That's weird, because people do have, like, a weird admiration for, like, Stephen A. and, like, this is his show. How dare you do this? But it reminds me, Kanye West, college dropout, last track, family business.
Yeah.
Right? Like, people got mad. I'm not even sure that she brought it up and questioned it. It's where and how. You brought it up on the biggest show on this network.
Yeah.
Talking to two black men about black folks' business. Two, in their minds, these white folk. Like, how dare you lift the curtain on another black man in front of other people? Like, you talk about this off air. You talk about this between us. You telling family business. Like, no. These aren't. We ain't at the cookout. Like,
oh, man.
This is journalism. She is a journalist. You have this information. It is true. You say it.
And again, what she did was check them before they drifted off into the blind spot. Because as men, it's just like when we talk about women's weight, or we talk about how a woman looks, like the way that we handle it, we have a blind spot. And sometimes yep. A woman has to be in the room. I say it all the time. There's got to be somebody in the room who's like, ah, don't do that.
100%.
And that's exactly what Malika Andrews did. Ah, stop. I see where you're going with this. Even if you don't mean it, it's going to come off the wrong way. Cut it out. Stop. And then all these men got pissed off and called for a job. And I was like, yo, Stephen A. Smith says wild shit. Wild. Max Kellerman had to check Stephen A. Smith on numerous occasions.
Yeah.
I've never called for Stephen A. Smith to get fired.
No.
It was just like, oh, he said something crazy. All right, well.
He's had to apologize.
Yeah.
Publicly. Several times.
So if anything, it's like, why would you call for Malika Andrews' job? And then you got to read the room when it comes to finding out who's on what side. When Jason Whitlock's on the side of getting her fired,
you're probably on the wrong
side.
You're
on the wrong team.
Yeah.
You need to ask for a trade. Or apologize, say I need to go be back on the other squad.
My question now becomes to you, and I'm not sure if this is going to happen or not, but does Perk different? Perk Mike, larger than this, does Stephen A., and it's hard to say he owes anybody anything, but in his position, seeing the backlash, the vitriol spewed at Malika Andrews, who's 27 years old, who's a bright, young black woman in this industry, does he now owe it to come out on the show and say, stop this shit? Does he have to publicly defend her? Because privately defending something when it's on a public platform is not enough now. It's his show. He is the guy. We can talk, yo, we should protect black women. These people aren't protecting black women. This is his chance on his show to read all this. He on Twitter. It's on every major network. Does he have to come out? Should he come out and say, first thing on First Take, stop this shit. She did nothing wrong. Leave her alone.
It's a complicated one, because if he was to do that, he could have done it. It would have needed to be done yesterday, right?
Now it's too late. But now we see the build.
Yeah.
He didn't stop the snowball up top. Now it's an avalanche.
No, and it's complicated in the sense that, well, if you address it, now it just picks up more momentum, right? because it sucks, man. I mean, yeah, you should, right? Like, I would, but that's not, I don't have that platform.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much he's paying attention. I think a lot of people, especially in the case of Stephen A. Smith, don't really understand what that man does. Like, they see him on First Take, he's like, ah. Like, they don't really understand how busy he is.
And he's a good dude by all accounts.
Yeah, but it's like, you don't understand how busy he is and how much they ask him to do.
Yeah.
Right? So, on a day-to-day basis, you know, he may be traveling for 5-6 hours. He may do First Take. He has to do some recon before he shows up on these shows. He has to watch the games that he talks about.
Nothing he does in the next 3 days is as important as this.
No. But nothing. What I'm saying is, I don't know how much he missed along the way.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm sure they're briefing him now.
Yeah,
I'm sure. Now it's become a thing. Yahoo wrote an article about it. There's just articles about Malika Andrews in this situation everywhere.
It's just crazy. Like, why are we really talking about Malika Andrews? Like, I just don't understand the vitriol and hate towards black women. Black women are the most disrespected people on the planet, right? As much as black men want to say it's them, stop. It's black women. We had a black man present. We ain't had no black woman present. Black women they don't dominate much of anything. They're not the CEOs in positions. Like, they are the most disrespected women on the planet. Women get disrespected as it is.
Yep.
Black women are disrespected. So, for y'all to come out here and like, Jason Wade, like, she didn't earn her job. Listen, you fat fuck. For you to sit there and say, like, for you to say what you say, and your entire life is now made up of you slandering people who look like you, who earned what? Right? Like, you used to be at the Kansas City Star an okay writer.
Yep.
But you made a career out of going after the woke culture. That's your entire career. And you're going to talk about a woman, about what she earned? You don't know her. Like, you got to stop it. I hate that motherfucker. But
he don't know her from nobody.
No, but that's what I'm saying. When he's saying it, and if you're in agreement with him, check yourself. Check yourself. But Malika Andrews has done nothing wrong for her name to be plastered all over the media. There's nothing wrong. Circle all the way back. Depending on where this is at tomorrow, Stephen A. should say something. Anything. Just, like, that's my sister. Like, this is like our frat.
Yeah.
Like, ain't nobody gonna get it. Like, and as they've said when it was Skip and Stephen A. Smith, or when anybody's on that show, we family. We get over this shit. We disagree all the time. We don't have to have the same point of view. But for y'all to jump on her, like, I would never jump on her like that. Like, if me and you had a disagreement, we had plenty of them on this podcast.
Yep.
And people started coming at you and who you were, I defend you in a fucking heartbeat. It's not y'all place, listeners, to sit there and talk about my man like you know him.
Yep.
You don't know him, just like you don't know Malika. She's 27.
Like, you know the dumb shit I said on this podcast at 27?
I'm saying this woman has a job. So
she's way better than I was.
I think she's great. I've always thought she's great at her job. I don't understand why you can't praise black women without having to want to sleep with her. Like, yeah. So many people on my timeline said that. I was like, really? Like, what's wrong with y'all? Y'all hate yourselves.
The objectification of a black woman's body is a whole different podcast.
That's a whole other show.
That's a whole different
show. Yo, I saw somebody was like, maybe if she didn't dress like Rosa Parks, she'd be treated differently. And I was like, what are we talking about here?
But.
If she went the other way, then what?
Yeah. We have both been in the presence. You were a friend with Demetria.
Mm-hmm.
Exact opposite of this.
Exactly.
Caught mad shit for it.
You so can't win. You can't win.
where does it stop?
Black women can't win. They can't. They can't. And it's just not good enough to be good at your job. You have to bow down and kiss the ring of every male in the room. That's crazy to me. I would never disrespect a woman like that. But y'all on my timeline talking about she's not going to fuck you, bro. You know, she hates black men. Like, how do you surmise that off of this? This is the craziest thing.
Because she has a white boyfriend. I wish someone would.
They
anyone
would.
Listening to this podcast? My wife is white and Mexican. Looks white. I'll be damned. So I was like, yo, bro, you can't talk about this shit. You got a white wife. Excuse me?
They'll try it. They'll try it.
She a better person than me. Because, and this is why she deserves everything she has in her spot where she's at. Because I would have acted a damn fool before ESPN could even send me an email. What? Oh. But I read comments. I do a lot of stupid shit that you probably shouldn't in a high profile like job. So yeah, I would excuse me.
No. And the last thing that we could talk about combat is like, I saw people was like trying to dig up the reasons why she's not good at her job. And then somebody pulled up her and I think it was might have been Mark Stein, were talking about the Warriors not making the NBA Finals. Like, see, she's not good at her job. Do you realize how many times Stephen A. Smith has been wrong? Or how many times Skip Bayless was wrong about LeBron James? Or how many times Skip Bayless was wrong about Tim Tebow? Or how many times Dan Orlovsky was wrong about a quarterback situation? He's a damn NFL quarterback?
Yeah.
And you're going to pick on Malik Andrews saying that the Warriors wouldn't make the NBA Finals last year? The only person that I remember picking the Warriors to go to the NBA Finals was Stephen A. Smith.
Yep.
And he carried that flag all... And he was right.
Yeah.
But do you know how many times he's been wrong? And for anybody to go, look, she was wrong. Everybody was wrong. Yeah. Nobody picked the Warriors to go to the NBA Finals last year.
No. The batting average for like hot takes is Joey Gallo on the Yankees.
That's
like, as the human hot take machine, I've been wrong many times.
Bro, at the beginning of last season, a vast majority of every, I do this every year, I read everybody's picks. I'm fascinated by this stuff. Who did everybody pick to go to the finals last year?
Lakers.
The Lakers and the Nets.
Yep.
Everybody picked the Lakers and the Nets, except for Stephen A. Smith. Everybody was wrong. Malika Andrews saying the Warriors not making the finals, that's what you're going to say, is she's not good at her job?
Klay wasn't healthy. Wiseman didn't play still.
And they, but
like, who knew, guys? Jordan Poole was going to go crazy?
I mean, it's like me, I'm a White Sox fan. Of course I thought the White Sox were going to win the Central this year.
Yeah.
Most people had the Guardians in last place. They're going to the playoffs. Yeah. Does that mean I'm bad at my job? No.
Guardians were selling people before the season.
That's what I'm saying. Everybody talked about what they were going to do, but you can't say somebody's bad at their job for a bad prediction. People are predicting that Joe Burrow was going to be the MVP this year. He's getting crushed in Cincinnati.
I drafted him in every fantasy league.
Come on. That don't mean she's bad at her job. Y'all are stupid, dog. Because y'all have worse takes than her, but because she's on TV, you want to be mad.
That's the key. There's no accountability. It's also why people get paid more money. Bring this full circle. Everyone feels they can do the job. The people who do get paid very well because not only do they do it, but the level of accountability they have when they do it. If she has a take, she has to stand on that forever. I just saw a Colin Cowherd clip on Twitter crushing Lamar Jackson. It's like he's not Drew. Who was it? Like, he's not Rosen. He's not.
During the NBA draft?
During the NFL draft.
Oh, yeah, NFL draft. Yeah,
he's not Sam Darnold. Yeah. He's not Rosen. Oh, no. Lamar, that's a fire. He's supposed to drop.
Right.
Crushed him. And now people bringing that up for Cowherd. An MVP later, a season right now that's crazy in 3 games. Man's 5th in the NFL in rushing. Probably might win another MVP this year.
Possible.
Very possible. Could have 2 MVPs by the age of 25. Cowherd got to stand on that shit for the next 20 years.
Yeah, he said it. So?
So? And he gets paid very well to stand on that take.
Shannon Sharp says Sam Darnold's going to be the best quarterback out of that draft. That didn't work out very well. And he'll stand on. He's like, yeah, I said it. I was wrong. But then nobody calls for his job. I'm just done with how men treat women in this industry. Like, because you can't just be good. You have to be perfect. And there's nobody that's perfect. Your ass ain't perfect. If you were, you'd be on TV. Relax.
Far from it. Barbershop All-Stars. Gotta love it. Twitter's full with them. Let's transition, if we can, to combat sports. That is what we're here to talk about. Before we get into the UFC Fight Night card this weekend, headlined by 2 women. One thing I often like the UFC that they do. They do give women headlining spots without hesitation. And pretty solid card for this weekend as we ramp up getting ready to go to Abu Dhabi. Still putting on very good competitive cards. This was the finale week of Dana White's Contender Series, highlighted by the second fight this year on a Contender Series by super prospect Bo Nickel.
Yep.
All everything, Mr. Wrestling at Penn State. Arguably the best collegiate wrestler of all time. Just pound for pound. Like, there have been greats. This kid was great the moment he stepped on campus. Transitioning to MMA, not going the Gabe Stevenson route, like pro wrestling and WWE, which you probably could. He wants to test himself, and by all accounts, looks amazing. Won his first contender series fight in a minute and 16 seconds, I believe. This one didn't last that long. Under a minute, 52 seconds. People are scared to death of his takedowns. And these guys still can't defend. First question, performance aside, Bo Nichols, the best prospect since who?
See, it's weird.
UFC prospect. I can't count Bellator because
Aaron Pico was the blue chipper at Bellator. Aaron Pico, Ed Ruth, AJ McKee. Like, they had a bunch of them. And
yeah.
They all fell apart. Yeah, except for AJ, who finally lost.
And but Pico looks great.
Yeah, now he had to figure it out. But,
what the fuck happened to Ed Ruth?
He lost. He lost in the welterweight tournament. I think he's been 50-50 lately, but nothing great. So, Bo Nichols. It's weird because we didn't really have, like, you would look at maybe the Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah.
In terms of prospects. And
some of those guys had careers.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, fighter, but
like yeah. He's 2-0. Like this is his first two MMA fights. I don't think we've seen somebody quite like this. And it's one of those things where you go, well, he's different because that wrestling background. But if you watch what he did in those fights, it's not the win. It's how he's winning.
Yep.
It's always how he's winning. It's like this last fight. He fought a guy who was 7-1 on the regional scene. All accounts a tough dude. Caught him with a punch immediately.
Yep.
And the ground game was so slick how he transitioned from armbar to triangle, like rolled him over and submitted him. I'm like, that's scary. Because he didn't even rely on his wrestling.
No.
It was straight grappling. It's just 2-0. So I don't think we've had a guy who was 0-0. Like, it's supposed to be like Sage Northcutt, right? Like, that was supposed to be the guy. That didn't pan out.
No.
But if you have a wrestling base, you have an opportunity to be that guy. And I think Bo Nichols is... He's probably one of the best prospects. I'm not going to go as far as Kevin Ioli on Yahoo and saying he's the next LeBron of MMA, which is utterly ridiculous. I love Kevin, but cut it out with the hyperbole.
Yes. I understand based on amateur accolades going into the pro, but it's still very...
Like, come on, man. Relax.
Yeah.
But I think Bo is... He's going to be a problem. The other question was, you remember when he had his first fight and everybody was like, why didn't give him a contract? I think I even said that. Then I thought about it. And I was like, oh, I know why they didn't give him a contract. Because they're not giving him a contender's contract. He's not getting a 12-12 contract. He's getting that Sage Northcutt.
Yeah.
That much bigger contract. And it makes sense because if you have Bo Nichols kick off contender series and they're like, well, why bury him on some fight night card or a pay-per-view?
Yep.
We can have him headline another contender series card where he's now the spotlight, ends up being talked about on SportsCenter 3 nights in a row before the fight, blows this guy out. And they already have him set for another fight. He's fighting in Vegas in December.
He's in the video game already.
Like, this dude, like, they played this right. At first, I was like, yeah, he should have gave him a contract. But I was like, nah, he's already got a contract. They're just giving him some more shine. That's
they closed the year pretty strong in terms of contender series as close as you get to reality television and combat sport.
Yeah.
Because Rivas headlined the week before, won, looked great.
17-year-old kid.
17. Went the distance. Great story. Captured headlines with that. Youngest fighter to ever sign to the UFC.
Yeah.
Then you follow it up with Bo. So that's 2 weeks on a Tuesday that you grab random headlines. You really have shit else going on.
No, they did it right. And the best prospect out of the contender series was Sean O'Malley.
Yes. So, entering, I had no clue it'd be Sean O'Malley.
No, nobody did.
Took the world by storm.
Like, you go watch the contender series, like, that's Sean O'Malley. He didn't have the colorful hair. Yeah. He just looked like a skinny dude. He looked like Chase Hooper's little brother.
Yeah.
Right? Or big brother, whatever. They're both skinny as hell.
But once he stepped in there, you're like, oh, this kid.
Oh, he's got hands.
And then Snoop on the call with.
Yeah. So was great. O'Malley was probably the guy out of contender series, but I think Bo Nichols, like, he's just a different level.
Yeah, to me, and again, guys had careers beforehand, but coming into the UFC, like, straight prospect, Uriah Hall, I would say.
Yeah, he was.
A prospect coming in.
Yeah.
He wasn't a finished product. He was on just like straight regional scene shit.
No.
He beat Weidman on a regional scene. And Weidman was like.
I mean, he was the most hyped guy
to
ever come out of the Ultimate Fighter. He just flamed the fuck out.
Yeah. And then that kick and everything. He was coming into the Ultimate Fighter like, yo, this guy beat Chris Weidman. Like, Weidman at that point was damn near going on his path to Anderson Silva. I was like, yo, this guy beat him. You know, so it's one of those where it's like, this is probably the most hype I've seen for someone since that in the UFC. So I think Bo, again, with his base, with wrestling, the athleticism is uber present. The way that he feints, sets up those shots, the punches, the ability to take people down and close the distance and take people down. And I don't want to say this is what he's going to grow into and anything, but stylistically, it's very Habib-like. And American wrestlers over time have shown the ability to develop insane knockout power because of their base.
Yeah.
Like and knowing how to transition and roll your hips and throw power punches. If he gets anywhere near Gaethje level power, anywhere near Big Rig power, Woodley power, like I'd go down collegiate decorated wrestlers who got power. If he gets anywhere near there, he's scary.
So all the UFC really has to do is slow play. And what I mean by that is
called out Hamza.
I know. And you got to wait, hold on, slow down. Like you, hey. Even if you could, maybe. But why do we need to burn that out now? Right?
Funny.
Yeah, like, but right now it's you do your two contender fights, you get a fight at UFC, was at 282
Vegas.
Get that fight.
He's the first fight announced for that.
Who is he fighting again? He's fighting somebody that needs to win. I can't remember who it is. But you fight early next year. You'll fight on the main card. Let me think.
They'll probably, I'm just guessing, you know, might put him as the headliner.
You know who
on the free ESPN.
Who was their guy? Greg Hardy.
Greg Hardy,
I guess. Tried it with him.
They did. The same thing. He fought twice on the Contender Series. Really didn't have much of a background.
Right. So, but
it was very similar.
Very similar, but Greg Hardy fight.
he's facing Jamie Pickett, by the way.
That's who it is. Jamie Pickett. Jamie Pickett needs a win. Yeah. He's not going to get it.
But he's not bad.
No, he's not bad at all.
It's one hell of a test. But Dana said it. There's no soft touches in the UFC.
There's not.
So it's hard to bring in someone who's 2-0.
The complicated thing is, like, I wouldn't want them to O'Malley Bo Nickel. Like, Sean O'Malley's getting a shot against Petr Yan, which is still it's the most bizarre thing to me. When Pedro Munhoz and Chito Vera and all those guys still exist. And, like, for real? I don't want them to do that to Bo. Bo's only had two fights. Let him get some fights. Give him, not squash matches, but slow play him up the ladder.
Yeah.
You know, you fight 15, then you fight 10, then you fight 7, then you fight 3, then you fight for the title. Something like that. If you move him too fast, it's inevitable that he may get caught by somebody, especially in the middleweight division as Alex Pereira, Israel Adesanya, seemingly Hamza Kamayev.
The striking Whittaker level is...
Yeah, like he's got to...
Drastically.
And as I always say, I don't know how he's going to react when he gets punched in the mouth. It hasn't happened yet. You got to get punched in the mouth. We had to see Hamza get punched in the mouth.
Repeatedly.
Gilbert Burns punched him in the mouth a lot.
Yes.
And then I was like, all right, he's for real.
Yep.
People wanted him to mow Gilbert Burns down. I was like, nah, I want to see what happens when he has to deal with some resistance. And we haven't seen Bo do that yet. Maybe we'll see that in December. But the dude's on the path. MMA is just such a wildly unpredictable sport, though. Bo could be that guy and then just get slept in a fight.
Yeah. I mean, look at O'Malley. O'Malley just jumped to fighting this upcoming month, the former champion.
Yeah.
Just lost.
Fighting Yan, arguably the strongest guy in the bantamweight division.
And if he wins that shit, you're like, well, like, what is Sean O'Malley? Like, MMA is wild.
It's a weird sport.
To that point where you mentioned it. Alex Pereira, like, he's 3 fights in the UFC.
Yeah.
He's in the title shot. Like,
I mean,
he's a grown ass man, though. He had so many years of combat experience. Like, he's been punched in the face.
Right. He did Glory. Like, he's like, Alex Pereira has been around a long time.
Yeah. So, I understand that. And he beat the champion.
Yeah. Bo, you just got here. Literally 2 fights on the Contender Series. That's all you got.
Everyone else has been punched in the face somewhere.
And it was funny looking at, I believe it was Mark Raimondi's interview with Jorge Masvidal earlier this year, where Masvidal was like talking about how Bo Nickel's basically ragdolling his ass in the gym before Bo was really on the scene or even like known, but he was like just talking about it. Those training camp stories are real. People don't really lie about getting beat up in camp.
No.
And Masvidal, a guy with that much chutzpah, would be the last one to be like, somebody beat my ass in camp. He was like, Bo Nickel was kicking my ass.
Yep.
And now he's a pro. So that dude's a problem. I saw people upset about
how that he's at 185. 170 would be so great for him. Like
I'd like 185 because we need some new juice there. At some point where Adesanya, Pereira, they're about to fight. Robert Whittaker's still hanging around.
Yeah.
Khamzat looks like if he moves 85 instead of staying at 70, he's got a date probably with Borrachina with Paulo Costa. And then it's like after that, middleweight's kind of weak.
Yeah.
It won't take too long for Bo Nickel to run up that ladder.
Damn, him versus Colby.
Yeah, he might drag Colby.
I don't know. There's levels to this wrestling shit.
There is, but.
So, like, yeah, like.
You'll have to see.
When you look at it, it's going to be interesting. So, that's the first fight announced for the Vegas card. That Vegas card is going to be a fun one, I'm sure. And then this weekend's card, though, I figure we just give a couple of predictions.
How about we just talk about this is what slavery is, right? So
it's questionable.
Let me explain this for people who don't understand. This is basically a lights out card. No media, no fans. It's been reported by the time the show is out, maybe we'll learn more. Mark Zuckerberg seemingly has bought out the UFC Apex and is having the card for him and I guess his friends.
No one really knows because like there's reports that could be like some metaverse shit. Yeah,
whatever it is, whatever it is. Imagine Mark Zuckerberg going to the Lakers and is like, you play for me tonight.
Just buy every ticket to the Staples?
No, just buy us out. You call us Genie Bus. It was like, I own Staples, no fans, no media. You play for me.
You do that shit for Disney World though, all the time.
But that's Disney.
Six Flags.
I'm talking about.
I mean, you know how hard it is to buy out Disney World?
I'm sure. I'm just saying, Zuckerberg is like buying a team is like, you're playing for me tonight, right? Now, in the case of this UFC card.
You buy the arena, not the team.
Well, he's bought out whatever is going on in the arena, which means the fighters as well, because now they have no fans. Mackenzie Dern addressed it like, fuck, I'm fighting in front of Mark Zuckerberg. I don't even know who's going to be there. No media. No media?
I guess they don't want Zuckerberg getting asked.
Nobody wants to ask Mark Zuckerberg a question. Put him in like a bubble or some shit. Nobody cares. But here's my point. I guarantee you, nobody on that card is getting a bump in pay.
No, because you don't pay. Again, I use my Six Flags and Disney analogy. If someone buys out Disney or Six Flags, you buy out the amusement park. That doesn't mean the ride operator gets a bump.
Well, the ride operator is not an independent contractor. The ride operator is paid by Disney, right?
True. I mean, if everyone was like, yo, we're walking and you don't got a card.
But
unless you pay us each 10%, 50% more,
look,
they'd be in a pickle.
This is what I'm saying. It's like they're bought out the Apex for these fights who now they don't get to speak to the media. They don't have fans. It's for a guy. Like if I go to your plantation and was like, I want all your cotton and like, well, I'm buying all your cotton. I'm not even buying your cotton. I'm overseeing your plantation today and I'm paying the slave owner. The slaves ain't getting a bump in pay. They got to go do what they were doing already. And I am sure Mark Zuckerberg paid maybe quadruple the price of whatever they're selling them tickets for at the Apex.
Yeah.
All together.
Oh, hands down.
Right? So whatever
this
it is.
This is easily the highest grossing gate in UFC Apex.
This is going to be nuts. But the fighters are like, they're left in the dark. They don't know what's going on. They're left to guess what is happening here. And now it's like, oh, it's like a show. We're putting on a show for him.
Yeah, it's a private show. He definitely paid like eight times over face value. There's that story of Vince McMahon not knowing how much milk costs.
Yes.
You could charge Zuckerberg anything.
He don't care. He's like, well, I got it.
He doesn't know like the value of real shit anymore.
I just
threw a number out, like 100,000 to rent out this whole thing. Done.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it was like several million. I'm sure he paid. But again.
A fucking Apex?
Yes. Whatever he's planning to do, it's not cheap.
I've seen a gate at the MGM Grand Garden Arena hit 3.2 million. People were ecstatic.
Yeah, no, I'm sure he paid like at least a half a million for this.
All right. But I'm just saying, like, that's a good night at like a real ass arena.
Yeah, but
you're like going to Nashville.
They charge like $1,000 a ticket for those packages at the Apex, right? Yeah. Those VIP experiences, which again, it doesn't equate to $500,000. But when you're buying out the venue and you say no media, Dana was like, I gave you guys a night off. This is our job. You're not giving us a night off. We still got to work. What are you talking about?
I still got to watch
this damn thing. I just can't go to it. Like, whatever you're doing, it might be cool for you or whatever, but it's just like.
So there's no post-fight presser.
There's nothing.
Well, they got on-air shit. So, like, they'll talk. You'll get
quotes. Yeah, I'm sure you'll get commentary.
Yeah, you get.
Somebody's got to talk.
And the Octagon, the same. Like, hey, what do you
sure, want? But it's just weird because this is like.
Olivia?
No, Megan, they don't allow Olivia. Megan doesn't go in the Octagon anymore.
No, no, not in the Octagon. I'm talking like well, backstage shit. Like,
yeah, she'll do. I'm sure she'll do that.
Somewhat media.
But that's employees of the UFC.
Yes.
Basically. But this is just crazy to me because I'm like, no media. Like, you're blacked out the event. All right. And Terrence McKinney had brought this up recently. He was like, oh, we got The Rock's shoes. Like, The Rock cut a deal with the UFC. Now we have to wear his shoes. We're not getting anything for this. There is no fighters union that says, we deserve 20% of whatever deals that you strike. There's no collective bargaining agreement.
That's the problem.
So whatever.
It's a league, and they are not like league employees.
Exactly. So Dana was like, I'll sell to Zuckerberg for $1 billion. It's a pure profit because the fighters still get paid 12 and 12.
If that, for this card.
My God.
Someone might be on a 6 and 6. That's old school MMA. That's Invicta money.
That's sad.
Listen, you never know. Let's talk about a couple fights here. We have a guest on our show coming up here in a second. Trevin Jones. He fights third to last card versus Raoni Barcelos. Trevin's coming off 2 losses.
Both of them are coming off.
Both. It's going to be an interesting fight. Should be fun. Bantamweight division. You know where I always go. Always pick the guest. Trevin got to come through. But he has a couple catchweight fights, some late notice fights. This is a full-ass camp. I think he can do it.
I mean, I'll pick him as well. Barcelos was a prospect at one point. He lost 2 in a row. This is a weird card because you got like Sadiq Youssef is on the card. Alexi Oleinik versus Ilir Latifi's on the prelims.
Which I don't
even know what a prelim is for a show that's completely blacked out. But
I don't know. Whatever. But Latifi Oleinik was just a pretty damn good fight.
Yeah. Jessica Penne is on the prelims as well. It's whatever.
Brendan Allen's on the prelim. It's versus Joko?
Yeah, it's not a bad card, I guess. I don't know.
Prelim's damn near better than the main card.
Zuckerberg just pulled up and was like, you got to fight this week? I'll buy it.
It's like, I'm in town. You watch anyone fight.
Imagine somebody did that to Floyd Mayweather. I'm going to buy your whole card.
He'd be like, where do I sign?
No,
it's all about the money.
Floyd would be like, no. How much of a cut am I getting? Like, you couldn't go above. You couldn't go above.
No, no, no. They just pay Floyd.
Yeah.
None of the other fighters would get any.
See, it's probably
Floyd true. Would do the same business. Like, where do I sign?
Yes.
Randy Brown versus Francisco Trinaldo.
Trinaldo's like 7,000 years old, but he's not really. He's only like 44.
Only 44?
He looks like he's 70.
At least. Like
a buff 70-year-old.
Him and Yoel Romero. They fight until they're 60. Yo, they may be 60.
Did you see Yoel murder Marvin Manhoff?
Oh, my God. Just, that's ground and pound.
Oh, my man. Manhoff was like, yeah, this is my last fight. They was like, all right, cool. We're going to feed you to Yoel Romero. And he's like, this is not my last. Stop. This might be my last fight on earth.
Oh, my God.
They got that man murdered.
The ground and pound was crazy. The celebration afterwards. Yelling into the camera.
He's a scary guy. Anyway.
44 years old.
I'll pick Francisco Trinaldo. It seems like he wins these kind of fights. Even though Randy Brown has won 3 in a row, Trinaldo's not an easy out. So I'm going to just pick Trinaldo here. I have no idea what's going to happen.
Trinaldo's won 2 in a row.
And Trinaldo, again, he could be 70 years old. He could just be hitting his stride. I have no idea where he's at fit is physically. I have no clue.
Randy Brown's winning this. Too many things to overcome. 6'2 at welterweight is crazy.
It is.
So 6'2, 78-inch reach, 8-inch reach advantage over Trinaldo. That's like, there's a lot of shit for Trinaldo to overcome, let alone Father Time, sooner or later. So give me Randy Brown in that one. Main event, Mackenzie Dern versus Jan. I'm not going to try. But Jan's great. Dern seems to like slip up in these like high profile fights. But Jan's coming off a loss to Marina Rodriguez, Carlos Esparza. That's two straight losses for her. Before then, she was rolling. I'm going to say she wins this one. I don't know. I don't like Mackenzie Dern in these high profile.
I'm picking Mackenzie Dern. I think she has to figure it out. I think Jan, coming off of the loss to Marina Rodriguez, was a split decision that could have easily went her way.
Yeah.
This is not casting any doubt on Jan's ability, but I think Mackenzie Dern has started to figure out the striking department. The ground game she's got.
Also lost to Marina, though.
Yeah, but
that was one hell of a fight.
I think she's figuring out the striking part. And once she figures out the striking department, everybody's fucked in that division.
Because you can't touch the ground.
No, you can't touch the ground with her. No. And the other thing about her ground game, if you've watched it, it is starting to mature where it is, you could tell at some point she was rushing into submissions. Now she's playing the longer game, working fighter, her opponents over. I think she's going to have one of her best performances and really make a statement as a title contender.
If you could tell me that the ground game, the hands are catching up to the ground game, sure.
I think if you watch her in her last couple fights.
She's not getting knocked out. She can go the distance, defend herself, strike. It's just my thing with jiu-jitsu people. It's still my thing with her. There's no natural takedowns.
No.
So your hands got to get not just good enough to defend yourself. They have to get good enough to drop someone. And then you get to work and you tap them out. I'm not sure if she's there yet in terms of development. Because she's not shooting for singles. Or getting people against the cage and dragging them down.
No, but what she'll do is if you use your strike in the close distance, you take them down from the clinch. Or you back them up against cage, you pull them off the cage.
You pull them down, yeah.
Like if she has that part figured out, everybody's in trouble.
Yeah.
Like Damian Maia became a better wrestler as time went on. Mm-hmm. Charles Oliveira is just completely different.
No, at this point, either he gets hurt or he hurts you.
Yeah.
Sooner or later, y'all both go to the ground and you're done.
And Dern was like, he's got the best jiu-jitsu in MMA. And she's not wrong. Because, like, as much as you could talk about Brian Ortega, as much as you could talk about, you could just run down the list. Gilbert Burns, Mourinho, like, what Charles does on the ground is...
Aljo's game is sick.
Aljo's up there. Me and Dean Thomas were talking about this. Aljo might be the second best grappler in MMA.
Yeah.
The reason why I say Oliveira is number one is because he doesn't blow it. Like, if he gets you, you're done.
He has functional jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Aljo will catch you with some real, real weird... Same thing, Ortega. They'll catch you with some real weird shit, but they're also going to catch you in, like, eight things before then.
Yeah.
But it's one and done.
But what makes
Oliver?
Yeah, with Charles, it's like if he's going for it, you're done, right? Like even Brian Ortega when he fought Alexander Volkanovski, when he talks about the guillotine finish, if you listen to him, he's like he made a mistake. He's very he's like I blew it. Like there was this, and us to the naked eye, we don't know, but he knew.
Yeah,
and that's what me and Dean Thomas were talking about. He was like he knew, and I saw it, but the naked eye doesn't know what he's doing. He's like, Charles Oliveira, it's so sound that once you're in that spot, it is over and there's nothing you can do about it.
No.
And he's like, Gilbert Burns is like the same way. If he gets you in a spot, you're done. He's like, Ortega's great. He's like, Aljo is very close to that. Like, if Aljo gets you in a spot and starts fishing for something, you're kind of cooked because he's going to get you. But Oliveira has offensive jiu-jitsu and defensive jiu-jitsu where it's like you're screwed either way. And then he strikes.
Close.
That's where Mackenzie Dern comes into play.
Yeah.
Mackenzie has offensive jiu-jitsu, defensive jiu-jitsu, but she hasn't figured out the striking portion to utilize that jiu-jitsu. Like Oliveira does very crafty things. Like he does this hip switch where he shuffles off of your hip and gets to your back. It's something that a lot of fighters are using now, but he made it an offensive move. If Dern gets that in their game, these fighters are screwed.
And then you look at Aljo with the leg kicks.
Yeah.
And then realize, like, yo, if you leg kick, leg kick, leg kick, you're so worried about that, you're not stopping me from shooting.
Aljo is the most disrespected champion in the UFC by a country. I'm, and this is, look, I hope he mows down TJ Dillashaw. Just because I want people to be quiet.
Yeah.
Because DJ's like, he's no good. He's like, dog, look, Aljo, it was no fault of Aljo's that he got kneed in the face in this fight.
No.
This was all Petr Yan's fault. Yeah. It was all his fault. And you was like, and people were like, oh, pussy, why don't you continue? You get kneed in the face. And it wasn't like Yan did it by accident. He just drilled him.
Yeah, that was purposeful. His corner like, yelled him.
Yeah, it was like, oh, what are you doing? And then people were like, oh, he got it the bitch way. But then what happened in the rematch? He won. Yep. And people still won't give him the respect.
Not
he beat Petr Yan. He beat him. Now people are like, oh, no, TJ Dillashaw. TJ Dillashaw?
The man was on everything.
Right. The man, that guy?
I got to see you. I got to see a clean TJ.
Yeah, like, dog, I hope Aljo
whatever
beats
that
him.
Looks
like. And I just, you know, then from that point, I want to figure out, you still mad? You still don't like him?
Still mad, bro?
Yep. All
yeah. Right. They don't like him after that one. So, I can't wait. This is going to be a good card this weekend. We'll be watching from home. No one's allowed.
Apex. Nobody's allowed.
But we'll see how everything plays out. Rolling through the month for the UFC, getting closer and closer to this pay-per-view that is stacked. What up, everybody? As promised, we are with our guests for this week. The UFC's Trevin Jones fighting this weekend, taking time out of a busy fight week to chill and chop it up with us. Trevin, thanks for coming through. We appreciate you. The beanie's a true flex right there because I feel like it's 100 degrees outside. So a man rocking a beanie in 100 degrees means business.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Trev Five Star Jones here. Sorry, guys. I couldn't hear you guys for a second down the end. I had to kick my friend out because his phone was loud.
No problem. No problem at all, man. We're excited to talk to you getting into this week, right? So you're coming off of a loss, looking to get right back on track. But we've seen you. Your UFC debut was great. Looks spectacular. Is there something now like coming? Because your losses honestly came right pre-pandemic. And then post-pandemic, there wasn't a lot of opportunity to fight like usual and to stay active. Do you feel like this is a chance for you to get back on the road, get rolling, get a couple of wins? Because before, you were very active.
Yes, this is definitely a good opportunity for me. It's actually a pretty big name. And, you know, the bigger the name, the better the opportunity. You know, a lot of guys don't see it like that. A lot of guys want to just pick and choose. I know this is our job, and I know we need to get paid. But eventually, you got to run into these monsters. So I feel as soon as you run into these monsters and get them out of the way, then you're only left with regular opponents after that. So, you know, my mindset's a little bit different. I never really had the easy road. Fighting all the way from Guam to get here was very tough. Most of my fights was on 3 weeks' notice. I was never tied to any organization. So they would only call me when someone else pulled out to fill in last minute. So I was used to fighting a lot of last minute and trying to stay ready. Yes, it was tough, man. Yes, some of the weight cuts went bad. Yes, a lot of things went wrong. But I look at this as like I came up, man. Came up, I was hungry. I wanted it enough to get it done no matter how tough the opponent was. And, you know, every fight, we got to go out there. We got to perform. We have to shine. And, you know, I'm very healthy for this fight. I'm happy on that. And yes, man, it's an opportunity for me to get back in the win column like any other fight, man. And it'll be a big win too. It won't be just a regular win where everyone's like, oh, I know you're gonna win. This is a nice win for me.
Yeah, I mean, the opponent of Ronnie Barcellos, you know, he was a guy who had a nice little impressive winning streak. He's lost two in a row, but he's got three fight of the night bonuses. He comes to fight, you come to fight. I mean, both of y'all need this win, right? So we can fully expect as fans to watching this fight that it's going to be a hell of a fight. I know you want to make short work of the guy. I mean, everybody does, but I feel like we're about to get a banger, a possible fight of the night possibility, right?
Yeah, it should be. It should be. It can be a nice stoppage. It could be anything, man. I know I'm preparing. I prepared correctly for him. I know how dangerous he is. I know how tough he is. So, yeah, I prepared myself correctly for a banger. A banger will be good for you guys, but, you know, I'm looking for a nice stoppage in any way. So yeah, man, we just gotta go out there and feel him out and see how it goes. Now, like I said, I'm healthy for this fight, so I'm ready to go. He comes to fight, I'm coming to fight. It's gonna be a nice one for sure. Like, just the anticipation of it. I know a lot of people been telling me they want to see it. Yeah, it's definitely a crowd favorite fight.
Definitely love the matchup. And you mentioned your health twice now, right? Is it comforting coming into a fight knowing that it's going to be at 135? There's no catch weight this time. Two of what your three UFC fights have been catch weight so far. Like you mentioned, fighting on short notice a couple of times.
No, just like, one.
Are you happy?
Just one was catch weight. My opponent missed weight.
So he missed weight.
He was 4 pounds overweight. So
I hope still took it.
For that, like when I spoke to Sean, he specifically said this fight don't matter. So, yeah, I am coming off two losses, but I hope they know I take the hard fights, man. I take the fights. I say yes. I take the risks, and they have to see some value in that also. Of course, we all need the wins, but I could have easily walked away with my money in that Karkamanov fight and not even fought him coming in 4 pounds overweight. I was on my third weight cut from being in a bubble. So I really didn't get to train much for that 3 weeks because I was in a bubble three times because I had five different opponents for that camp. Mm. And so it was just a tough situation for me, man. That's how the cookie crumbled. It was tough for me. I ended up losing my friend that very same night. So it got even rougher than it was. But, you know, I'm here to make that all up on Saturday night. I got a tough opponent in front of me. And to put him away will just knock all that out of the way.
Yo, let me ask you this, man, because, you know, we just found out a day ago, as we're recording this, we'll probably find out more details, that there are going to be no fans, there's going to be no media at this fight. So you're coming into a fight, there aren't going to be, isn't going to be anybody there except for us watching on TV. When did you find out that this was going to be no media, no fans? And that, does that change anything for you?
I just found out yesterday. I found out from some media yesterday that there's going to be no one in the audience for this particular fight. I heard it was bought out. I don't know if it's safe to say the name that bought it out, so I won't say it, but I heard someone bought out the whole event, so I think there is going to be fans. I think there's going to be fans, but it's just not going to be regular fans that are able to buy those expensive Apex tickets. It's going to be like fans that, company fans, you know, of the event that bought out the arena, because why would you have no fans? Of course, the UFC would want to make some type of money on it, so yeah, it got bought out, I heard, and I think there's going to be some type of fans, just no media and no one that's really able to cover it the proper way.
Like, so for your last, let me see, it's been four fights you fought. You fought at the Apex, you fought in Vegas. I know you wanted to get in front of a crowd. Is there a part of you that's like, damn, man, I want like a real live ass crowd?
Yeah, I was barking for a crowd for a long time. I asked Sean when they matched me and Ronnie up first. I said, okay, me and Ronnie, that's a good crowd fight. Like, put us at. We wanted to be on the August card. Who was it? Who fought in August? Was it Usman?
Yeah, Salt Lake.
Yeah, that's what I was aiming for. I wanted that card. I begged him. I asked him for that card. He didn't give me that card, but I said, okay, that's coming off a loss. I guess you don't get to say much, you know? It's all cool. I guess I got to go out there and just whoop on this next guy, and then maybe I get to say the next one. But, yeah, of course I wanted a card, man. I feed off the card, off a crowd, and I've been a crowd guy, like, it's crazy when you've been like a crowd guy, you get energy off that. There's definitely different types of fighters. Some might get weaker off that, but a crowd will get me stronger. I had so many family coming to Vegas when I was fighting at the Apex, and they wanted to be at my fights, but they couldn't be at my fights. And so even them yelling my name and yelling me to go extra, that's extra fuel to me. That's how I grew up fighting. Came up fighting. So, it is what it is, but yeah, a crowd definitely can turn some guys on, and a crowd definitely can turn some guys off. But, yeah, it'll turn me on a little bit extra to hear extra people screaming, my boys, you know, and everyone else, you know. It's definitely a benefit there. But, you know, we're back at the Apex for a fifth time, trying to get comfortable there too. So we get a little bit more comfortable in Apex.
You're kind of comfortable being in uncomfortable places and situations. Looking at your fight record, it's not like you fought like a ton at home or in the States, even fought in Japan, Russia, South Korea, Guam, Philippines. Like you're used to fighting in places a lot of your opponents haven't been. You've been traveling all over the world to get to where you are. What has that path been like for you? Because one thing people don't know is like, this isn't the traditional path to getting to the UFC. You didn't just, you know, fight in a local promotion and everything. You took your show on the road. What has that been like for you? And how has that, like, made your journey here even more special?
That's where I gained the most experience and be able to fight guys like Ronnie and T-Mir, Fat Liv. That's where I got the attitude from, because when someone's, when an organization's flying you out, they're not flying you out to fight no chump. You know, they're flying you out to fight a guy that's worth paying a couple thousand for someone to fly out and fight. So I was always fighting these toughest guys from all these countries. And yeah, definitely gained a lot of experience, you know, fighting the enemy territory, getting booed when you're winning, you know, a lot of different things going to affect. Like, yeah, people are going to say I have eight losses, but I got 5 split decision losses, and those are in enemy territory. Like, I won those fights. If I was to ever post those fights or play those fights, you guys will go crazy and say I won those fights. You know, the best part about why I'm able to let those fights go is because I still made it to the big leagues. And I get to take that experience with me. You know, that's the only reason why those fights get to get put in the past right now. But if I never made it to the big leagues and I had those fights, there will be horrible calls, man. The judges are not always the best fighting in enemy territory. Like, if I made you guys watch 5 of those fights, you can easily give me 5 of those split decisions fight. You might give me all 5, but I guarantee you'll give me 4. I guarantee you guys will give me 4. And if you give me 4 of those fights, me and Ryone's neck and neck. We're neck and neck. That's neck and neck.
I mean, you know who else had like a bunch of split decision losses and ended up coming up in his career? Jorge Masvidal.
Yeah.
There was a time Masvidal couldn't win a split decision to save his damn life.
But then when it clicks, it's crazy. Just because of the enemy territory, man. Like, man, you're getting booed even when you're doing something good in Korea or Japan and you're winning. You're getting booed. Like, you land a kick, it's a hard kick. No reaction. The guy lands a soft comeback kick and they're like, oh, like it's the biggest thing in the world. So enemy territory is definitely harder maybe to impress the judges, you might want to say, because the judges are not really on your side. The promotion is not really on your side. So that's when it gets tough. But as far as me bringing my skills to the table and being prepared for some of those fights, like, I was fighting the best guys ever since. Like, I was fighting the top guys ever since, man. Like, that's what I've been doing, you know. A lot of guys probably want to be more smart or whatever, but, man, you can't be the best of the B team, man. You got to be the best of the A team. So I'm trying to be the best of the A team, bro, like, no matter where it goes. Like, even fighting Ronnie or someone, and then I was to get let go, I can go back and whoop on a couple more guys, and I'll be right back, because I've been touching that real level, the true level, not the level where you're taking these B-level boys and then they're whooping on you, and then you go out and you still get whipped on. Like, I'm confident that I'm going to have top-notch experience going into this fight. I already have. And fighting someone like him is going to give me even more experience. So it's a great opportunity no matter what.
I have to ask you about your UFC debut, where, again, TKO, amazing debut. It's now a no contest because it happened during a time where the sport was still testing for marijuana. Mm-hmm. And they were stripping wins. We just saw Nate Diaz fight. And Nate Diaz rolled up in the post-fight press conference smoking after a win. The testing has changed so much in 2 years. Do you feel like, one, they should kind of give you your win back? Like, do you feel like, yo, we need to go back?
Real quick, because I noticed. So they changed the rule 3 months after my win. 3 months after. Like, how are you going to change that 3 months after and still hold it against me? Like, somebody should be fighting with me. That's what I'm fighting for me. That's what I feel. Like, someone, like, my team, my people, we're not going to go in and cry about it. The world saw what happened. I was on 34 hours notice. They called me Wednesday night at around 7 o'clock. I weighed in Friday morning around 11, 9 o'clock. So the weight cut was rough, man. I was huge. I had to make the weight. I made the weight. Like, a lot of these boys are doing catchweight, what they did for Chimaya. They didn't come close to doing that for me. They told me I had to make the weight. They made me go outside and run in 118 degrees. They got the plastic for me to run. And I continued to push, and I made the weight. In 34 hours, I cut like 16, 17 pounds. In 34 hours, it was torture. It was torture. But I got it done. And the UFC made sure I got it done. They're like, oh, it's catchweight. You cannot be a pound over, nothing like that. I went outside, I got that pound off like a man. They're asking me, how do you feel? Of course I feel great. of course I feel great, but really you're done. You're done. You're done. You can't even walk. You can't even move. But, you know, my boys stood behind me. They pushed me. And I went out there and I got the weight out, the extra little pounds off. And then I went back and I came in a pound under. And then the fight, you still got the fight tomorrow night when being at your weakest of weakest. So, of course, in that fight, you're not able to attack back like you want. Your body's fragile. There's certain things that other professionals know because they're also professionals. They're coaches, you know. I got hit with a nice body shot, you know, but I knew I was tough. I knew I was tough. I felt this power. I'm like, oh, man, I got some partners that hit way harder than this. You're good. Hang in there. When he slows down, then we're going to put it on him. And that was exactly our game plan, when he slows down. Like, I only got to watch Tamir, like, maybe, like, 2-3 hours before the fight. Like, that's the only time I saw what he had. And then he was like, whoa, this guy is good. This guy's good. Like, oh, my God, I got to fight this guy right now. Okay. And so it's a tough situation. And that's what gave me the confidence. Like, it was a good thing on that night, but it also backfired on me in the Kakhramonov fight because I had 5 different opponents for that fight. But my confidence was up high from that fight because what I had already did. I had already beat someone on 34 hours notice, super talented like that. So it had gave me confidence that I can do it again. But man, those 3 weight cuts was a different story. It was a different ball game. I was completely, completely drained. I had no explode in me at all. I just couldn't fight like I wanted to fight. And then I still think if he cut that 4 pounds, I would have beat him. I think that would have made a difference in the strength. You know, when I got him down in the second round, I still almost had to finish him. I think he would have been done there. So that 4 extra pounds, you know, that was smart. That was smart team, smart management. They told a boy to stop cutting weight. Because, you know, he was going to have to deal with some strain and everything. And that was just a good strategy. And it worked. And, you know, I'm mad at myself that I let that work on me, man. I should have been smarter. But, you know, like I said, I was hungry. I already had flew here all the way from Guam. And I came off that big valley of win. And then when I fought Mario was not my original opponent either. When I fought Mario, I was supposed to fight Randy Costa that time. And he didn't show up. So, man, I was already going through that switching stuff. So I already had 2 opponents in the UFC, 2 wins. And these are both guys I did not prepare for. And then going into my 3rd fight, I had 5 different opponents. And by the time it got time to watch Kakhramonov, I didn't even want to watch him because I already had watched so many guys. And then my game plan was to clinch, pin Ronnie Lawrence on the wall and everything, which I was trying to do to Kakhramonov. Next thing you know, you go fight Kakhramonov and he has good wrestling. He has good defense. He's decent. And the game plan should have been switched up. So there was a lot of things that just, it wasn't my night. It just wasn't meant to be my night that night. I accepted it already. But yeah, man, I still think if he came in correct, that 4 pounds over was the difference because he wasn't drained or nothing, man. He wasn't drained. And I'm drained. Like, I just didn't fight a couple guys because they didn't make weight. And now I go fight a guy that you bring in to make weight. So I want to get that fight back. I need to win this fight because that's the guy I want to see again. Most definitely, I want to see Kakhramonov ASAP, like ASAP. As soon as he drops the fight, it's me and Kakhramonov. I don't want top 10. I don't want top 15. I want Kakhramonov first, and then we'll go ahead and go into that. But that's my goal. I will wait for Kakhramonov like it's a championship fight.
Damn. Let me ask this, man, before we let you go, because I want to go back on this, the Teamer fight, because you had a performance of the night bonus. You cut weight. It was a short notice fight. Did anything in the back of your head said, I might get popped for some weed? Like, and you can't possibly be even thinking about that, trying to jump in a fight on short notice. Like, that's crazy. No.
So right when the UFC called me, I already reported, bro. I reported I smoked weed, everything. They said it was all good. Yeah. That's the first thing I said when I got on the phone. I noted it down, everything. That was the first thing I did. So I was not worried about it because it was already past that process. I didn't know there's an aftermath process that's going to go down. So I already reported that. I told him I just got done smoking when they called me. I'm like, I just got done smoking. They got the notes. They know it's true. That's why the UFC didn't penalize me. That's why they didn't touch my bonus. That's why they gave me my full pay, because I did declare it. If I didn't declare it, the UFC would have took my bonus away and they would have took some of the money away or something. But I did declare it. So in the rule book, if you weren't in the RTP pool and you declared it, it is not a violation. So it wasn't a violation. I did not violate under the UFC. Only the commission decided to do that against me because I guess, you know, when you're playing with the big boys like Ali's guys, you know, he know what to do. He knows what to do. And Tamir's talented. You don't want Tamir. You don't want Tamir to take an L from someone with six losses. You're like, nah, we got to get that back. We got to get that erased. We don't want Tamir to have a loss to someone with six losses. So, yeah, man, it just was what it was. There was no way I can win it. I tried to fight it for a little bit. But the things that they were saying that can happen if you fight it, the way you can, they're going to shelf you and all that, the commission. So, and I know all the, if I knew the fights were back out like it is now, I would have fought it harder because we weren't going to be fighting in Las Vegas as much. But all my fights have been in Las Vegas, so I had to, okay, you guys win. I had to. I had no choice. So I didn't give him a hard time. I just said, whatever, I got my money. I did my thing. The world saw. And then that's just what it was, you know.
Listen, we're counting that as a W around here. And, yeah, you know, they can't take it away. It was an amazing performance. Looking forward to another amazing performance this weekend.
Yes.
We appreciate you taking time out, man, from, I would say, a busy week. But this is as normal as a week as you had in the UFC. Yeah,
this is part of the game. We got to do this. This helps me lock in a little bit more. This should help a lot of people lock in. You know, you guys get to refresh what I'm going against, what I need to do, and just help me stay a little bit more focused. You know, I can be walking around this hotel right now and not focusing on anything, but you guys bring me back to reality. Hey, you got a fight, you got a big fight. So, you know, there's benefits on both sides.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much. Trevin Jones fighting this weekend, one hell of a fight. Performance of the night, I'm calling it right now. Let's get this man a bonus. Go home with 50K. Let's be happy. Thank you so much, Trevin.
We appreciate you all, as always, for listening to us. Make sure you check out our boxing episode from earlier in the week. Keep your eyes peeled for our wrestling episode, which is coming up later as well. We appreciate you all from here in Blue Wire Studios and Wynn Resort in Vegas. Everyone who helps out the show. Brian, making us look pretty. Anton, on the one and twos. So we appreciate you all. Follow us on social media at Corner Podcast _ on Twitter, Corner Club for Life on Instagram. Check out our YouTube where you can watch this show and all the rest of us and see us and get this amazing quality. Until next time, though, we are out.
Peace.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.